Welcome to Tiger Pops Podcast, a place to dissect, analyze, and swoon over the webtoon Midnight Poppyland. Every week, we'll go through another episode and break down character development, relationship regression, plot, symbolism, body language, and more. And of course, we'll be bringing out those tinfoil hats for some theory time. Every week, we'll be joined by sharp-witted, detail-obsessed, and dare I say, thirsty fans ready to tackle the latest gem. Let the analysis begin.
I want to let you know about a treat we have for this episode and most upcoming episodes. You can now view the video recording of this episode on the Tiger Pops YouTube channel. So if you want to watch the host's faces as we discuss the episode, you can head over to YouTube and search for Tiger Pops Podcast to enjoy. See you there!
Okay, hi everyone, and welcome to episode 58 of Tiger Pops. And this is a very special and sad episode because it is the last episode before the hiatus. And we're all going to be very sad, but happy and looking forward to season two. So speaking of which, we are going to be, besides for introducing ourselves, saying which character we want to see more of in season two and whose backstory we want to understand more. So I'll start. I'm Mindy. And I really want to see a lot more about Quincy, because Quincy has shown himself to be kind of hiding himself. And I feel like he puts up this softy, irresponsible, immature exterior to protect himself. And I'm really curious about how his background formed him, what kind of interaction he had with his father, what he feels towards his father, what he feels towards clan duties. Does he want to avoid it when he grows up? Does he feel like he'll have to do it anyway? What's his relationship like with Toro? What was it like when they were younger? So I'm really curious about that.
I agree. That is like one of the, I would say that's one of the top for me. And I'll just go. So I'm Rissa. I do the Midnight Poppyland fanfill episodes, and I love this podcast. I'm so excited to do this chapter. I would say for me, Officer Lane, like she's been kind of in the background, but I want to know kind of what's up with her. Like, when is she going to pop up? Because we know it's going to happen. Probably tied in with Goliath, but we'll have to wait and see. And plus, she's gorgeous. When I went back to look at her picture, I was like shook. I was like, oh, so pretty. But everyone's so pretty. Let's be real. The guys, the girls, everyone.
It's kind of like Hollywood, where like every character just happens to be gorgeous.
Yeah, like, oh, my.
Love it. I'm Ashleen Schufeld. I'm from the Midnight Poppyland fan group on Facebook. And then I also host a Twitch stream called The Feminist Critique. And the character that I want to check out is, one, Goliath, but also Gyu. I want to know more about him and like his backstory, why he has so many jobs, how did he get those terrible tattoos, and just also, you know, that one part earlier on where he got really upset and said that Quincy and Tora had saved him. I want to find out what that's about.
Yeah. Oh. I guess I'll introduce myself now. So I'm Tanya. I'm from very small town of Utah. I just randomly stumbled upon this while just searching for something to read while I'm a stay-at-home mom and have a bunch of kids just driving me up the wall. Gotta have something to do. But I immediately fell in love with it, and yeah, so, but I don't know. I think I want to learn more about Ardeen. Is that how you say her name? But we really don't know really much about her, like, other than she's Poppy's friend and works with her. So I'd like to know more about her. There we go.
We want to know everything, and we want more romance, and we want more plot, and we want more mystery solved, and we just want it all.
Plot, sweatpants, I'm not sure, guys, like, the balance. Yep.
Okay, so let's get into this final episode. We start out, the last thing that happened in episode 57 is that Brian, the genius, who cannot see what is straight in front of him, says, "Hey, Poppy, do you know that Tora is gay?" And this is where Poppy opens up. She's like, "Really?" But he's always asking me for a And the thuglets are all like, what? For a what? They're looking completely shocked and like kind of like their lives depend on this, which I'm starting to suspect that at this point they all want Tora's attention and they feel like it would be a personal affront to them if he wasn't gay and interested in them. It's kind of the impression I'm getting.
Oh no.
And Poppy's like, sweating nervously because now she's looking back at all the times he asked her for a kiss, but she doesn't say kiss, she says kith, and it's so cute. The time on the rooftop, the time at Regina's Peak, the time in his apartment, the time right now in the cave, stunning, gorgeous images. And she's like, for a gun. Very believable. Sure, Tora's asking you for a gun. Which relates to sexual preferences in what way, I don't know.
You know what? Whatever you're into.
I can see a lot of role playing that can be done with a gun. That's true.
Oh, wow. I like how no one is shocked by the gun, though. Like, really. They're just like, oh, that's it. Like, they're really deadpan. Like, oh, a gun. Oh, like, like in any other situation, people might like hesitate. But in that situation, they're just like, eh. It's like a day to day thing, right? Weapons.
That's a normal thing for them.
Yeah, so Patty was worried that like this whole thing would get back to Vincent, but they don't seem to be too bright, or at least now they're pretty mentally impaired also. So they're like, see, Brian, told you there's nothing going on between them. Wait out, big bro Tora like that. Shut up, I just wanted to be sure. So okay, they do have a little bit of the sense that like, okay, they can't out him, but they're also like, they're concerned. They're like, they don't want Tora to be straight, I think. This is, I don't know, they're funny guys. They've been eyeing Tora and Poppy and wondering to themselves, but then they like, you know, like, no, for sure he's gay. These guys are just really funny. And I find their conviction more funny in light of the fact that when they were playing pool, which was like 2 weeks ago, they were like, oh my God, he's gay, really? And like then 2 weeks later, now they're totally convinced that he's gay. Like it's, their critical thinking skills are a little bit lacking.
That's why they're thuglets. They're not full thug. The thuglets. They're not quite there yet. They're like, I think they really respect Tora and also probably have, you know, boy crushes on him and just like a lot of feels around that. So And it's, you know, when you're in a group of people, you want to know if you don't have an answer to something like who's dating who or do they like this, you're going to speculate a lot about it. I think they just want to know at this point and they think they know, but they don't.
Yeah, they're all like, they're not even paying attention to her like right after that fact, right? Because like Poppy's just staring down at her phone and she has like that little grin on her face and it's really cute. And she knows he's not gay, but
yeah. And they're all like, they're joking around with each other like, you're dead, bro, you're dead. No, I won't be if nobody tells him. So again, like the fear of Tora, the fear that he strikes in their heart. So now, right, Poppy is looking down at her phone and we're wondering what is she looking at on her phone. So now we get into a flashback of what happened when she asked him to put the necklace on her. So I think, Ashleen, where are you doing that part?
Yeah. So she kind of like, they're back at the like cave part, right? And she mentions to him that, you know, she wants to wear it around her neck, and that when she's given gifts, she tends to actually like to use them rather than, you know, put them off to the side or, you know, for it to be like a nice little paperweight or something, right? Yeah. To be forgotten. And but she has like this conviction in her eyes about like, you know, wanting to make sure that he is okay with her, with giving this pretty important gift to her. At least that's how she feels.
Yeah. Profanity Teller was saying, so the fact that she put the necklace in a heart-shaped box and she's asking him again, she's like, are you sure you want to give your heart to me? It was just so sweet.
Pretty on the nose. Mm-hmm. It's cute.
He looks like he's a little bit shocked that's what, you know, she would want. Like, she would want to keep something that meant so much to him, you know, close to her. And he just has, looks like a shocked, surprised look on his face.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Well, like what we've seen before too, because I think I said this when we were talking about it in that episode, that the reason why he gave it to her was because he thought he was gonna die. Like mm-hmm. he knew what was coming up. So, and Poppy's not stupid. Like we already know this about her. She sees a lot more. So I feel like she kind of knows, but she just wanted, she also thought she was never going to see him again. Right. So she just mm-hmm. kind of wanted to like, make sure that this was actually the case, you know? Mm-hmm. And he just kind of like stares at it. And then he tells her to turn around. And it just, my heart. It's really sweet.
He doesn't, you know, this is, I think, a part of Tora that we all like. It's like, this is the taking control Tora, like I guess you could say the alpha Tora, right? He doesn't say, okay, I'll put it on. And he obviously is very sensitive in many ways. And we love that sensitivity as well. But we also like, a lot of people like domineering men and, you know, the whole mafia guy. And this to me was him expressing that. He's like, turn around, you know, and very like kind of commandeering, in control, assertive.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, she does exactly that, right? And he starts putting it on her neck, but she's got her phone out and it looks like she's just kind of like staring at it while she's waiting for him to do that. But what she's secretly doing is taking a picture of him so that she has, you know, because I feel like he really is the sort of guy that who you would like point a camera at him, he'd be like, you know, no pictures, please, right?
So like it's very hard to get him to take pictures.
Yeah. I feel like he definitely would just be like, yeah, no pictures whatsoever, right? But for anybody that knows, like you do like having at least one picture of somebody that you love, right?
Yeah.
Even if it is, you know, in that moment. And for people who don't like pictures, you regret it not taking the pictures when you had that chance, right? Like you were too much in the moment. So she just wants to capture like this moment to remember it so that there is something.
And you know, Paola pointed out this amazing parallelism where in the very first episode of the season, Tora is taking first or whatever, one of the first episodes, Tora sneakily takes a picture of her and now she's mm-hmm. sneakily taking a picture of him.
Aww. I didn't even think about that.
Oh my God. This is such perfect closure. There's a lot of people pointed out a lot of really cool you know, closures between like the first episode and the second episode, last episode that we'll get to, but it's so cool.
Oh, I love that. I didn't even think about that. Oh my God.
I love that too. I also love how there are definitely details within these frames. Like you can still see the nail polish on Tora's mm-hmm. hand, which is great. You can also see his big ass man hands that are the envy of the fandom. But you get to see a lot of his hands. There's some hands going on in this episode. You see more shots of him. And I'm like, Lily knew that there's certain parts of the anatomy, I mean, his whole body, but there's some fan appreciation of this chapter is what I'm saying.
Because a lot of people love his fangs, and his fangs are in that picture.
Oh, yeah.
I love his little fangs.
Yep. Like, now I have to like look at my teeth and like, how prominent are our fangs?
So, and she kind of like giggles a little bit, right? While she's taking this picture. And then he goes, "Oi, Bobby, this thing is stuck." Because he can't get the clasp, and it's because of he's got big hands. And you know, if you've ever like tried to get a necklace on that's like just been a like a real pain in the butt, or the clasp is too small and you're just like fiddling with it, it's the worst. You're like mm-hmm. just get on me.
I felt this whole position was like extremely sexy and intimate. Mm-hmm. You know, she put aside her hair, she's exposing her neck. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I feel like it's very intimate if somebody would put a necklace on me. And mm-hmm. again, her shoulders, they're all exposed. It's super sexy in my opinion.
Vampire vibes, the fang, the neck, everything, the choker. It really does give me vampire vibes.
Ooh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, just like the whole, I don't know if it was meant to, but it has little knobs too, but I'm if anyone loves Buffy, I'm Buffy obsessed, so probably making a leap there. But
yes,
even nail polish, like Buffy. The vampires were nail polish.
Yeah, but he ends up like apparently it's stuck, and he can't like get it. He can't like hook it together, right? And she's like, how is it stuck? And he's like, I don't know, I just can't do the thing. And she's like, well, don't force it. Like, don't force the cloth. And he's like, don't worry. I got this. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't. He doesn't got this. No. He ends up breaking the necklace. And then it's just, and I find too, like when Lily draws them kind of more simplistic, like she does in this, you know, moment, it's to kind of convey that, that this is a silly part, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's definitely used, that's in a lot of artwork, that's a way to express comedy, is to simplify the features and have them have those kind of blank round eyes. And it just, cause it looks sillier when they look more simple like that. And his face right there it's pretty derpastic. So I love it too. He's just so focused and it doesn't work. His man hands crushed it. He was too strong.
Yeah. And then she gets like little tears in her eyes and are just like, no, Poppy. Oh.
So I think, you know, you were mentioning that it's supposed to be funny, and it is funny because a lot of people relate to, like, you know, the guy's like, no, I can do it. And then he breaks it, like, totally relate to that. But I think there's also a lot of symbolism, and there's symbolism in what Poppy's about to say also. But even before that, Danny was pointing out that, you know, Tora is trying to do this without help, right? He's trying to initiate a relationship without help. And he wants to force the pieces together so badly, right? He wants him and Poppy to be together. And Poppy just told him last episode, slow down. I can't do this now. I'm not ready for a relationship now. And she tells him here also, you know, Tora, you know, don't force it. Let me try. And he's like, no, I'll do it. And he ends up breaking it, right? So, you know, it's a lesson about relationships. If you try too hard to push it when it's not ready, it won't work. So, and Poppy is reassuring because, you know, of what she tells him. But what do you guys think about the fact that she was crying? Like, what do you think made it so emotional?
I think it's because she wanted to, like, to have this as, like, a reminder about him around her neck. And then because, you know, the clasp is broken, there's no way of, like, fixing it. Oh, maybe it's like there's no way of fixing this broken relationship. Maybe
she's feeling like this definitely is a very special moment for her, and she feels like it's symbolic of like, oh, is something going to go wrong between us? Mm-hmm. That could be.
I think so.
Some Nordor was also thinking, besides for thinking this, is that maybe the chain itself, and some people asked that last episode, maybe the chain itself is sentimental to her, and that's why she, you know, put it on this particular chain. Maybe it's from her mom, her dad, I don't know, her grandma.
Yeah.
So maybe something about the chain itself is special.
I also think that really, when you're planning to give someone a gift at a special moment, you want things to go perfect. And when they don't, some people are like me, where I get real frustrated. Sometimes there's tears if things don't go all perfectly. So I think there's a ton of symbolism, and I love kind of the parallels between the relationship. I also feel like this is a moment she wanted to go really well and it didn't. So she has that moment of like, no, like this was supposed to go like this. And then she really rebounds quickly in the next panel, I think, with the comments she says.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like she, he ends up like swearing and he's like, sorry, I don't know my own strength sometime. And she's like, well, I haven't used it for so long. You know, are you trying to reattach it? Cause even though it's like broken, he's still trying. And that's like kind of adorable in a way.
So here, I guess with that line, with that line that she hasn't used it for so long, that kind of, maybe that it's an old chain, so it possibly could have came from her dad or something, you know, so.
List of unsolved questions.
I'm just staring at these panels. This is just so, I just love this moment, really. But I love how the scene turns around too. because Tora's still just sitting there all sad. He's just like so focused on fixing the thing that's broke.
Also, can we talk about how he doesn't have any feet in this moment?
I didn't even notice it, by the way. I did not notice it until he mentioned it in the comments. He's so cute. Yeah, Lily is kind of like traumatized because we, you know, gave her so much grief over those boat shoes. So she's like, ah, screw shoes, forget it.
You know what? It's so funny because somebody actually mentioned it. Nicole, one of the mods, mentioned that. And I was like, well, at least it wasn't those boat shoes. And she's like, true. those boat shoes weren't actually that bad. I always just figured like his feet were just crossed like inwards, and that's why we couldn't see his shoes. But
that's very back bendy crossing, and his ankles would be extremely flexible if he actually twisted them in like that. But
yoga pose. I didn't notice it. I look up here, guys. Like my focus is like the chest, the face, you know, the arms. I didn't see the missing feet, but you know, maybe he has. He has camo socks because like that's what happens. Like you go into the club and you get cool socks. It's a gift. I don't know. Any excuse to make this look good, but you know, these things happen. Like little things like Photoshop can be wonky, webtoons itself upload can be wonky. So you guys are cool for catching it.
She ends up like, you know, pointing out that like, hey, it's not gonna work. Like the metal piece is broken. And he's just like, well, crap. Like, you know, and then she's like, it's really okay. Like, don't worry about it. And he just kind of like is staring at it almost like, I don't know. It feels like he's defeated almost. I don't know. and then he's like, are you gonna toss it away now? And then she says, of course not. And like, I think if we're, you know, going to put it as like the relationship, right? He's asking, are you going to toss this relationship away? And she's like, well, no, like it's still a thing. It's just take some time. Let's fix it up.
Right. Anna was saying so, like, in this world, if something is broken, you toss it away.
Yeah.
You don't put any effort into it. And you know, it's interesting. I think a lot about, I mean, she gives a whole long thing, but I think a lot about marriage because I've been married for, you know, almost 11 years now. And there have been times where I felt like tossing my husband away. Let's just say that. And he's more patient, so he didn't really feel like tossing me away. But, you know, you don't toss something away just because it gives you trouble, especially if it's a good core to begin with. So
exactly. You recycle it. I'm sorry. That was a really bad joke.
trying to think of how you recycle a relationship. But you fix it.
No,
you
know, yeah, you it. Yeah, exactly.
You add bolsters, you add supports, sometimes you have to toss it in the fire and melt it down and fill it up again from new, but you keep it.
And she does kind of like mention that of like the form might have changed, but its essence is still the same. And he's just kind of like, he's just watching her in that moment and they're quiet. And then it's not until like she puts her hand on his and she's like, anyways, happy birthday to us. And
she was speaking to him. She was speaking to him directly about them in that moment. That's what I really felt about it. And I love his smile because the fandom was so worried about this scene because everyone before was like, where's the necklace? Like screaming to each other. Like, what happened? They thought the scene would go horribly. But I actually think there was a lot of maturity, which I love this comic for, is that it's pacing itself in a mature way. You know, I don't think we get a lot of that in like fantasy novels or webtoons. So like this, it's very sincere and sweet. And I like that. I know everyone wants the passion and I think that will come, but I love the cuteness.
I think it's realistic though, like with, you know, real relationships do take time and effort, and they're not, you know, like movies where it's like, okay, we're gonna take the two of you and now you kiss.
An hour and a half. Yeah, my favorite thing to see in novels, and it's hard to do this because like novels in terms of, you're building up a point. You know, if it's a romance, then the point kind of is, you know, the couple's falling in love. But I like to see what happens afterwards, especially because, like I said, you know, I'm married and like there's so much of life that happens afterwards. So one of my favorite novels, for example, like in, that I saw in Little Women, when Meg gets married, a lot of the, there's a couple of chapters devoted to her and John and how they struggle. And as someone, like I want to write, so I kind of want to write a series because I don't want things to stop at the end of the romance. I want there to be books about like the relationship as it progresses and all the growth and difficulties that happen afterwards.
I think that's something that we don't see a lot in like media in general is the after effects. For example, like say The Bachelor or Bachelorette, right? You see like the romance, whatever the heck that means in that show. Listen, there's people who love that show and it's okay. You're allowed to like trash things.
But no, I love it too, but oh my gosh. What happens after is they get paid and then divorce.
Exactly. Exactly, right? So like, but we have like this weird notion in our head from like media in general that like, you know, two people like get together, fall in love, and then they live happily ever after. And that's not the reality of this situation. That's not like, and anybody who's married or is in a long-term relationship can attest to that, right? That, you know, life isn't perfect afterwards. And I would like to see that more in media about the slow burn and, you know, the two people coming together and working it out and, you know, all of their problems in between, because that's real life for you.
I think, sorry, go ahead, Jessa.
No, just real quick. I just think really we are kind of spoon-fed. A lot of people can predict what's going to happen in a webtoon, in a story, because there's a formula that's used and it's very like, once they kiss, they go to this, they go to that. And then they'll have, you know, the after effect where they'll have five kids or whatever, you know, or the, what is it? The last chapter, the prologue. But I like Lily's work because I'm not able to guess everything. And when she does pace it, it's in a way that I'm like, oh, it's not instant gratification. So that's all I wanted to add, is like, that's why I like it, is because it's not giving me everything, but it's just giving me enough to keep. I mean, I'll stay with this till the end. I'm here. I'm here for it.
Yeah, and if you notice, Patty was saying how, you know, it's kind of a little bit of the opposite of what I was saying, where Victoria's trying to force the relationship, but she's slowing him down, right? She's telling him no. And she did the same thing with Jewelry, right? Jewelry tried to push her into having like a physical relationship with him when she wasn't ready. And that's kind of, that's why he left her, because he wasn't willing to wait. And in such a cowardly way too, he wasn't willing to break up with her either and be honest with her. He just dangled her along and cheated on her. But Tora is willing to wait. She's telling him, I'm not ready. You know, and he says he's okay with that. He's like, we'll wait until you're ready. And he doesn't even, you know, not even for sex, but even just for a relationship between them, or for her to see themselves as in a relationship, because they clearly are in some kind of relationship, but she doesn't want to label it. And he's just patient. And the smile that he gives her, to me, this is like the first genuine smile that I've seen him have that's not mocking. I don't know if it's the first. He's definitely smiled before, but it's the sweetest smile that I've seen on his face, and the most boyish and happy and healthy that I've seen him. And I just love it. And she, you know, she still has her arm on him, and it's just such a tender, affectionate, connected moment.
Yeah.
I love this. Forever.
Yeah.
And so like we go back to her looking at her phone and reflecting on this, and you know, the little blushy blush, right? And then she looks up from her phone and sees that Tora is standing by Quincy and Gyu. And then he looks over and then he puts his, you know, hands to his lips, right? Like he's gonna do a smoke, and of course that means a kiss. So or I guess in this case, Kith. And then she puts her phone up and like all the dudes are staring at that moment. And then he kind of like looks back and yeah.
And blushes and pretends that he wasn't doing that at all.
Oh yeah, like he even blushes, right? Which is
Quincy looks confused.
He does.
I feel like he blushed too, because like he's like he only zones in on Poppy, but then he sees everyone else around and is like, okay. Like, just look at these. I just love it. Some of them are in love, obviously. Obviously, this is Tori's harem in the back. The Thuglets are part of his groupies, but I also love how Quincy totally saw it and he's just kind of like, what's happening? What's going on?
Do you think that any of those dudes were like, is he looking at me?
Oh, yeah. Totally were. They totally were.
They were like, this is my moment. One of them. At least one.
Yes. These poor guys. They're hilarious. Self-delusional. Adorable. Hopeless. So now we get into the piggyback scene and we have a whole great monologue with Poppy. So who's doing the piggyback?
I got it.
Okay.
So we go through the monologue and it starts that I'd lay in bed in the dark, pillows damp, envision blurry, and I'd ask myself, is this really love? And it starts on this kind of somber romantic moment. We see the above shot of the street. We go over to Poppy, you know, a little tipsy, running over to Erdene and Pinky saying, piggyback ride. And she totally is about to like hop on there. And Pinky's face of terror is probably a highlight of this shot. He's just like, oh no. If you've had friends who do this, people are freaking heavy. And if you pile them on, like I've done this with my gal pals, like it's not a joke. So I feel for Pinky right there. So when two people jump on your back is a bit, but I thought I love the comedy of Pinky in that moment, because I think all of us were wondering, where did Erdene and Pinky go off to? So we get to have a little more closure, like, oh, they're still there. You know, we didn't know if they would head off into the night, wink, wink. You know what I mean? They might still. Still could happen. The night is young. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just laughing.
No, it's fine. Okay, and then we go to the next panel. It says, is love supposed to make you feel anxious and fearful, insignificant and small? And I'll stop there because I feel like that resonates with me personally, but I think a lot of people, when you're just trying to figure out like what love is or how it should be for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course we have their piggyback ride too.
Talking about her time with jewelry, right? She says like she used to, her pillow is damp, her damp from crying, and her vision was blurry from crying. She used to cry when she was with the jewelry and feel anxious, fearful, insignificant, and small. And that's awful. And I have to say, like, I was lucky enough never to have a bad relationship because my husband was my first relationship, really. But I know a lot of people do relate to this, and this is just a terrible, like, yes. It feels so horrible that this is how Poppy felt. And you know, I guess you can understand why she's nervous about getting into a relationship with Tora if this is what she experienced with the jewelry.
It can be damaging. I was in an emotionally abusive relationship for 2 years, and it gives you horrible trust issues. Like, you have someone sitting there saying that they love you and all this stuff that's just a bunch of lies, and then you meet someone else and it's hard to let yourself be open to them, to where you get hurt again. It's the fear of it's gonna be a recycled, you know, repeat mess, and it's not fun to go through. So yeah. So I feel that. So.
Yeah, I feel the same. I went through something similar too, and it's rough. It's super, super rough when you, I think it's even harder when you're a realist and you're thinking like, well, maybe this is should be what I should expect. No one can be perfect, but then you start making excuses for stuff. And that's the hard part if you're a realist, because you're like, well, maybe this is all you really get. Maybe this is how it really is and I should accept all these sides. But of course, in a way better relationship now, and you realize you were really settling. And it's also something to do with like self-confidence. Everyone has their own little journey. I'm glad you got it in the first shot, Mindy. I'm happy to hear it. And I'm happy to hear that you got it as well. Of course, later on, it's just you know, for, I think the words, as I said, resonate with people who've been through it, but it can still resonate with anyone, really, mm-hmm. even just the story. Now,
Oh no, I was just going to say, I like that it is talking about that emotional part and like what is healthy and what isn't healthy when it comes to love, because like, you know, everybody has said like they've resonated with this, you know, one way or another. And, you know, for anybody who's like younger, that doesn't quite get it, I like that for them. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like if we're teaching, like, you know, people in their teens, right, that like what love should be and what, or, you know, healthy relationships, then they're not going to not make the mistakes. Cause like, I mean, everybody's journey is much different, but at least they're going to realize that, you know, like what an unhealthy relationship is.
Mm-hmm. And my 17-year-old niece, she reads, you know, she reads Midnight Popcorn too. And, you know, it's nice for her to see it so that, you know, she knows what bad relationships look like. And thankfully she has parents that have been together for 18 plus years. So that helps. But a lot of people don't have that. And so for them to come here and learn what a relationship is supposed to look like and what an unhealthy relationship is and to try to avoid that, because it's not fun. It's not fun to be in those relationships, because even now with me being with my husband for, oh God, we're going on 7 years, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's still hard. Trust issues are still there, but it gets better.
I really love that. And I think that's something which I've probably even said this in a previous episode again, why I think Midnight Poppyland is so unique is, and there are a few comics coming out with more like life lessons and really kind of trying to set more of an example in a fantasy world. It sounds weird, mm-hmm. but like real story you can take into your real life and look at. A lot of stuff that I took to heart as a kid was from media, because I had kind of a dysfunctional home. So when some people say like media doesn't have that much effect on you, there are stories that really got me through hard times. And maybe, I think you guys are exactly right. Someone might be reading this, going through a hard relationship, or maybe, you know, thinking about themselves, mm-hmm. they want in the future, and this might really speak to them. So I love it as well. And if we go on to this next slide, it says, and then I like to think back to when I was a kid. So Poppy's kind of like going back in her memory. And then of course we see the hand. We got our tour man shot, man hand shot. Anyway, reaching out to Poppy to pick her up like the small bean she is. And then we get, okay, Pinky's face in these panels just kills me. I'm just scrolling through and he's just the most ridiculous. And he, you know, picks up Poppy like she weighs nothing and puts her on his back in a shot that I want to screenshot because it's so adorable. Like, look, so, so cute. And I just love this. Thoughts, anyone, about this shot?
Oh, no, I definitely agree. I'm screenshotting right now. It's so good.
I don't know why, but I got a feel of like a territorial thing to it.
Oh yeah, for like sure. I think there's that
on another thing. Guy, and I mean, yeah, she's Erdene's in the middle of it, but still, there's another guy, and he's like, no, nope, this is mine, and I'll take it.
It's a safety thing too. She's a little tipsy and she's up kind of higher. I think he also has that bodyguard mode. So he was like, she might fall off. Let me get you, you know?
Or Damien might collapse and like be squashed like a pancake, you know, at any moment.
Yeah. And things can go awry.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I thought it was also territorial, but I love the fact that, you know, Poppy doesn't even hesitate when she's on him. She just smiles and she's happy. And they've reached the point where, you know, previously, like, you know, he told her like three weeks ago, he never held a woman's hand before. And here he is with this super affectionate, cute, coupley behavior where she's on piggybacking on him, very intimate, very cozy. And he's gone, he's progressed so much. You know, he's gone from totally isolated, totally lonely, totally guarded. And now he's like piggybacking this girl he likes on his back and she's totally happy with it. I was just so happy for them that they've reached this level in their relationship where they're comfortable mm-hmm. enough with each other. Like, this is just totally opening up. Love it.
I wholeheartedly agree. And then we go further into it where it says, we're going back to the inner monologue, which is so poetic. And it's saying, when my footsteps were light, my mind was clear. And laughter came easily to me, kind of about her childhood. And then Pinky's like, big bro, thanks. And he's like, thank. And then he's like, for getting her off. And then he's like, training this Monday, because he's calling Pinky weak. Because he's like, you can't hold two women on your back, Pinky. Training for you, you know. And his face is up of terror. And then we get another line, when the sky was the deepest, brightest blue, still about the childhood. And Pinky's terrified because he's like, oh no, I effed up, you know?
Oh yeah, because we've seen Tora's like training schedule, and like he's mentioned, you know, to Gyu, who was like, hey, how did you get like that? And he's like, well, I work out, obviously. But I think that his workout schedule is like pretty rigorous. And I don't know if Pinky can handle it.
I think it's stuff of legends, because his face is literally like, I'm gonna die, this is how I die.
Adorable, so freaking cute, oh my gosh.
And then we go back to Tora and Poppy, monologue still going on, and he's like, I'll get you a cab. And she's like, where's your car? And he's like, didn't drive. And then she's like, I don't want to get in the cab, like, this is fun, let's walk for a bit more. And he has the little blush because he's like, oh, you know, I couldn't say no to Poppy, obviously. He's got her on the back, and he's just like feeling real happy about this. And then we have the line, and something deep inside me knew what love should feel like. And I really like this line, guys, because I think we do instinctively know, but that's a me thing. Maybe this is something you learn later on, but I feel like when you know it's right, it feels right. What are your thoughts?
Well, Danny pointed out that, you know, even before she knew he didn't have a car, she wanted him to drive her home. She didn't want to take a cab. She wanted more time with him.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, like, for anybody who's ever had like those nights where you go out and, you know, you're leaving the bar at the end of the night and you just want like a little bit more time, whether it's to in the case of here in Halifax, we have a place called Pizza Corner, and you go there and you get yourself a donair or a poutine, no joke. I know it's a stereotype. And like, and you hang out with your friends, and like, and it's like those nights when you're young and they never seem to end. I feel it's what this night is. It's the days. It's like that joy of like having, like being tipsy, but not like too drunk. And you feel like that joy deep inside of you, that like, of like youth and like, does that make sense?
Like there's no care in the world. They're
you're just enjoying
the moment.
Yeah, you're enjoying the moment. You're hanging out with your friends, or in this case, you know, somebody that she's really interested in, that she just wants to spend time with him and, you know, hang on to his back. And yeah.
It's funny because I want to tell a story I found very funny. So when I read this, I was thinking, you know, oh, Poppy wants to spend more time with him because like she likes him and she wants to be together with him. And I just remember feeling like this feeling of relief that I have a husband to come home to, you know, that someone like, I don't have to like ask him, oh, can you spend more time with me? Or like, I want to be with you a little longer. Like we live together. And I remember my husband telling me this story when he was younger. He had a friend who was like, oh, I don't want to settle down because I want to have my options open. I want to have like as many girls as possible. And my husband looked at him and he's like, you don't have any girls at all now. He's like, if you would have one, you would at least have one girl. The delusion of choice. Illusion. So anyway, so it's nice to, I'm happy about the fact that I have someone to come home to.
Yeah. It's definitely comforting for sure. And I think right now they're enjoying their birthday. And, you know, Poppy says, "You were so swell back there, Tora." And he's like, "Back there? Where?" And then we go on again with the love is patient, love is kind. As I was saying, like, I think innately we know what love is and how it should feel to us. But I think that is a journey, and she's going through it. And she's thinking about it right now. And then Poppy goes on, like, "When you came in and swooped me up and led me into the club like some mafia boss." And she's just talking about, you know, the whole scene. And not even those scary bouncers tried to stop you. And that was so badass and sweet at the same time. So she's just like, you know, "Tori, you're the bestest." And then we have love as understanding, compassion and forgiveness. And then we go to Tora's face. And he's like, "Hold on tight, you're falling off." And then she's like, have you always been such a suck up? And we go more
into, he's asking her that.
Oh, is it? Oh yeah, okay.
I think so, because of what she says.
Oh yeah. And he's like, "Have you always been such a suck up?" And then we go into more of the quote that says, "Love makes you feel expansive, not contracted, and it gives you space to relax and to breathe and to relax." So I this is so poetic, guys. I loved this part, the monologue.
Obviously, like, we know it's from, a lot of it's from Corinthians, so, you know, it's a very well-known phrases that are really beautiful.
Is it from Corinthians? I didn't know that.
I'm not even Christian, but I'm pretty sure it's from somewhere in the New Testament. And
it does. Well, that's the thing. I don't know. The love is patient, love is kind. I've heard that before, and I feel like, I was like, I've heard that somewhere. I think it's the Bible, but I don't know, so.
Yeah, let me look it up. Love is patient, love is kind. It is, yeah, Corinthians 13, 4-8. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, keeps no right record of wrongs. Yeah, it's a whole long, really nice nice phrase about love.
I love it. I wonder if she has some influence from that, or just, you know, this is kind of like a mosh podge of all these thoughts that she has. And then I have, then it goes to, let's see, Poppy saying, "At least speak the truth, Mr. Grumpy Pants." And anyway,
her whole behavior here, like, she definitely sounds very tipsy. Like, this is the most open she's been with him. Like, she just is pouring compliments and after compliment after him, to him. I'm pretty sure it's because she's tipsy that she's so effusive.
Yeah, no, there's things that she wouldn't say while she was anywhere sober. So I think it's the tipsiness.
I think so too, but it makes it the scene more fun to me, a little more open, and their banter is cute. And then he's like, "Yeah, make any man babysit a kid and take her home, see if they don't get grumpy," saying, you know, like, he's just teasing her back. And then we have more, "So to make mistakes and to grow from them." And then she's like, "Keep saying that, but I don't think you see me as a kid at all," which is like kind of being a little flirty. And to
she's been pretty flirty all night, so
yeah. Mm-hmm. the flirt is not stopping.
So do you guys notice how he's holding her hair? So he's leaning forward and her legs are straight. So usually when you hold someone on the piggyback, you know, you pick their legs up, right? But who was it that pointed out? Nordor. Nordor pointed out that he's holding her in a way so that her legs can stay straight, so her dress doesn't ride all the way up, even though it's more uncomfortable for him. I'm like, oh my God, that's right. Yes. I mean, her dress still is pretty high up, just saying, but like, mm-hmm. But if it was that way, there'd be no behind coverage.
Okay. And then we get into Tora asking, what does everyone say about him? Cause they get into the discussion, and then she tells him, you know, everyone thinks you're gay. And he's like, what do you think? Do you think I'm gay? And then she just continues saying, you want to hear another secret? And he's like, no. And then we have more of the inner dialogue to say, to have faith and to believe, even when the future is filled with uncertainty and doubt. And then she's like, Erdene told me. And then she says that she saw you, and his eyes like take on this like shocked and traumatized. And we don't hear it. We don't know what was said at all. And he stumbled. And there's a little more of the poetic mama going against in the background, and he almost trips. And I love the slash shot, by the way, because someone pointed out in the fandom that you see it says no U-turn. And so people take that as no going back now, because I think they've crossed that line, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, love it.
Also, I didn't realize, but she's wearing, oh wait, no. Is she wearing his coat?
Yes.
Looks like yeah. It. Yeah. Yeah. She's wearing his coat so that she's covered up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another coat that may be going into her laundry hamper.
That's what you do. You collect their clothes. I do. I did. I'd been in my boyfriend's jacket before we started living together. They just so happened to stay at my house, you know, and I would wear them a lot.
So there's a whole bunch of like amazing parallelisms that people pointed out here. I hope you don't mind if I take a few minutes to go through them.
Yeah.
So Pauline was saying how in the first episode, if you remember on the steps, after he saw her and he left the train, he just fell down like an idiot because he was like so overwhelmed with her. And here he's falling again. And Victoria Cece was pointing out how right over here it says stumble. And she was reminded how in episode 15, Tora talks about himself and he says, all we can do is stumble through the dark, wondering when we'll finally see the light one day. So now here he is stumbling, but he's stumbling with his light, right? And the next scene, there's a ton of light, right? The city streets are lit up. It's a normal society. It's not a clan society. This is just normal people. It's a successful, you know, industrial area where there's, you know, people have money, people have jobs, people have careers. He's with the girl that he likes. So this is like a total shift from the last time he was referring to stumbling. And Nordor was also talking about how he fell outside the train station. He wasn't sure why. And when she when Poppy fell down from the tree, she was right. This was a very emotional moment for her. And she was completely overwhelmed. It was like the last straw. And she was blinded right afterwards, right? Tora covered her eyes. And here they're both falling, but they both have their eyes wide open. You know, Poppy knows that he's in the mafia. He knows that she's uncertain about a relationship, but they're falling together. Mm-hmm. Oh. Gorgeous.
Mind blown. Wow. People spot these things are amazing. So cool.
Oh, and Patty also pointed out when she talks about love can be a strong gust of wind or a soft, gentle breeze against your cheeks. She pointed out that you remember when she was at the train station, she suddenly felt like a cold blast of wind when Tora walked by her. So that first time he walked by her, she felt like a cold chill. And, you know, he was cold at that point in his life. Everything was cold in his life. Everything was chill. He was just an ominous presence. And now he's like a soft, gentle breeze against your cheeks. And their cheeks are probably close together at this moment. It's gorgeous.
Too fresh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait. And guys, now we have to come up with theories. What do you think she told him that Ardeen saw?
Oh, yeah.
I'm wondering if she might have seen him kiss or maybe something along that line. I don't know.
I don't think he would have stumbled that much. I don't know. Because that he knew that already.
Checking her out. Like, I think that could be something, you know, like staring at, you know, the ladies Definitely. Or something. Something that you don't want people to notice.
As you were saying, maybe she saw him drooling while he was looking at her. Because remember, at the beginning of the club, he definitely was drooling.
Actual drama.
Yeah. Oh, God. And I think Chanuel and Emery both said maybe she saw that he had a hard on when he was looking at Poppy or when he was kissing Poppy. Which I could totally see Poppy saying now because she seems to be like as a tipsy and flirtatious right now.
Yeah.
And Nordor said the most hilarious thing. She's like, oh, Ardeen saw that you can take your feet off.
She knows the truth.
Yeah.
Listen, he is just very flexible, okay? He does yoga, obviously. Jeez.
Wait, have we ever seen his feet? Because besides, maybe he has, what's it called? Biopic feet? No, what is it? What is the word called? Whatever, you know, metal feet. Maybe like in his torturous fits, maybe he cut off his feet. Okay, that's terrible. I know it's very gruesome. Forget it.
This isn't Full Metal Alchemist.
Hey, sorry, no. He's a cyborg.
It was supposed to be funny and then it got now. Really gross. So no.
He's a cyborg. That's what I'm going to believe now. He's too perfect. He's a robot. It makes perfect sense to me. And his robot feet come off. There we go. mystery solved. I think that. I don't know. It has to be something like, it can't just be the kiss. Cause I think there has to be something else. I think a boner is likely. Cause I think that would be hilarious, but I don't know, guys. I don't know. I could have battled one, I should say.
Good question. I haven't answered because I have no idea. I have no idea what, you know, Erdene saw that has Tor all freaked out in that moment where he's like, internally screaming.
Yeah, maybe she saw him doing something at the office, something like really stalkery, like looking through her desk or like smelling her chair or like.
Oh my God. Smelling her chair.
Oh, I know, right? Oh, that's awful. Wait, it's the perfect timing. Like, you know, where she sits, it's where there's a certain, you know, an anatomical part of her that he's interested in. Sorry.
Yeah. And Jacob walks in like, oh. too silly for me, but I love it.
Yeah, you know, that would make him react like that, given how you're reacting, Ashley.
I need the artwork of this ASAP. Someone go.
No.
the creepiest of her. Okay. Ooh. Anyway, oh yeah, now I'm gonna pass on the reading of the chapter. Who's next?
Me.
Yes.
I believe it is me. So so then we see a car driving down the road. It says, "You decided your place or mine." We see inside the car it's little Quincy with some unknown persons.
I thought it was the club owner. Do you guys think it's the club owner? I think it looks like him. Oh, but I don't know if he was wearing the same outfit, though. I think the club owner was wearing a vest.
I think it is.
Maybe, yeah, you might be right.
I'm going to go backtrack and go to the chapter while you read. I'm going to try to find it.
Quincy says, "Just a minute, Pumpkin, trying to get a hold of someone." He's like, "Sure, let me know soon. We're exiting the highway." And then Quincy just looks concerned, worried. But then you wonder, it's about the hairpin and everything. And Poppy says, "Quincy, have you checked your apartment from a hairpin?" He's like, "I was going to tell you, I've searched everywhere and it's not in my apartment. If it's really missing, I could get you a replacement. Those are just red crystal beads, right?" And I don't know, he looks kind of concerned. I don't know if he's concerned because he doesn't want her to be disappointed that her pin's missing, or if he knows that it's of some meaning to it. I don't know, but she says,
I'm totally interrupting. I look back at in episode 54. Yeah, it's the club owner. It's the same hairstyle and the earring. Yeah, same outfit.
So he's in with the club owner.
He's one layer down, guys. He's one layer down. One bed down.
But yeah, Tanya, I also was wondering, like, his face looks more concerned than it has to be. Also, who's calls at, like, it's probably, like, God knows what time in the morning.
Oh.
And he's calling Benjamin. So it must be, like, really, I think it's really important if he's that nervous and calling at this hour.
Yeah. I mean, you want to call at a late hour if it wasn't, you know, such a big deal, because Poppy right here says, "Yeah, it's not anything expensive, but and it was my fault for being careless, but you won't be able to get a replacement." And she says that it was a family heirloom of sorts and it belonged to her dad.
Yeah. So
then we gotta, you know, we don't know much about her dad at all.
Like, no, one was the mom's, and the mom was from a
yeah.
Just because the mom honestly had resting bitch face, we're like, she must be in the mafia.
But now I'm sitting here questioning her dad, like, you know.
Yeah. And we all know the dad acted very strangely. Remember when he was sitting in the tree with Poppy and he saw the white van? He's like, "Oh, we gotta get down." And we're like, "Why?" So maybe all along it is the dad who had the mafia connection.
I think so. And I think maybe that's why Poppy's mom's not around, is because they couldn't be together or some sorts, or someone made her disappear. I don't know.
Yeah, and a couple of people, Vintage Nerd was pointing out that it was the dad who thought Poppy had a box.
So yeah.
Maybe he was like the Quincy one, you know, who left the clan and didn't want to be part of it, but he still had that skill set. I mean, yeah. Okay, I guess theoretically anyone can know how to box, but whatever. We're coming up with, we're building a portfolio, a case.
Right? And that's the thing too. Like, I think Quincy like knows what Benjamin is like, right? So he's very like, I think he knows that Benjamin took it because he looked everywhere. He can't find it, you know, and that's where she left it. And he just, you know, he wants to help his friend, you know, his new friend out, but also like, cause he was a matchmaker of sort for, Poppy and Tora. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think he just, he's trying to do something. He's trying to like, you know, figure it out. But unfortunately, Benjamin is not picking up his phone.
Also, people were thinking, you know, like we always said, we're like, oh, maybe Poppy's mom is Vincent's sister. Maybe Poppy's mom is Quincy's mom. Now people are like, maybe Annie J was like, maybe Poppy's dad is Vincent's little brother. I mean, there are like so many possibilities.
Yeah.
Right. It's, I don't know, but she's definitely taken us on a ride with the story. So I'm enjoying it. But then you see Quincy and he's got a little drop of sweat going down his head and he's just, you know, cursing at him, wondering if he did take it. And, you know, we know he did. And then you see down here, you see little Benjamin sweating to death. And his mom, she looks a little roughed up. So I don't know if she got beat up or anything, but she looks a little rough around the face.
Yeah, it looks like dirt or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't tell exactly where they're at. I don't know if they're in.
Well, I think this is something that, like, you know, in the earlier chapters, right? Where obviously it's been a pretty tough life for Candy. And having to, you know, work to, you know, feed her young son at a relatively young age. And kind of being caught up in this sort of like lifestyle, right? So she probably, because of like those connections, like she knows these people, she knows what they're capable of. She's probably seen some messed up shit.
Oh yeah.
So, and the fact that, you know, she didn't, when you're in that sort of like lifestyle, it's hard to get out of. It's not a case of like, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps or whatever. And she doesn't want this for her son, but unfortunately that's the path that he's going down.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they're, you know, they're obviously pawning it, the pin, but I'm wondering if she's all scuffed up to possibly owing money to someone. And this is his way to help her.
Here's the very weird thing, right? So she told him before, right? He's like, oh, as soon as I earn enough money, I'll get you out of here. And she's like, oh, Ben, don't be naive, which made me think that her debt to the clan or her reason that she works at Club Miracle is not monetary alone. Like, I think that there is another reason. But also, I think Candy would not be here pawning this jewel off, which she probably knows or suspects is stolen. I don't think she would be doing this unless she was forced to. So I feel like something must have happened right then and there or before then that she's doing this, because she seems to not want, she seems to be like a person who wants to be independent and earn her own way and, you know, be honest, right? She told Ben, oh, I'm earning an honest living. I don't think she would want to pawn this unless something bad had really happened now. And
exactly.
Here, here's what happened.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think she knows something. I think she has a bit of information that's become really relevant to the story, which is keeping her in the life as well, as you said. I don't think it's just that she owes money. I think she knows something about Vincent, possibly. Maybe was a paramour of Vincent at one point. Like, I think she might have been one of the main squeezes for a time. So, like, and I think if you're a main squeeze of Vincent, you know some shiz. And I think he's like, you can't leave this lifestyle because, like, you know too much, either you're dead or you work for me. So like, I think she's going to have more to do with that coming on. And I definitely think she'll have some connection to Goliath. Not sure what that's going to be yet.
Right.
Sorry, that's a little too tinfoily. Wow, yeah. She's very defeated here. She looks much younger. She doesn't have her makeup on. She is wearing just like a tank top and leggings or something. She looks very like something happened. And this whole scene, so Christina Agin was saying that Christina knows Asia that Ben may have signed him and his mom's death on the dotted line. Like this whole scenario, I mean, and you're going to it like with the people around, they look very, very shady. And maybe they know, you know, it looks like they're appraising it just as a jewelry piece, but maybe, you know, we all suspect it's clan related because it looks like the Baltimore crest. So maybe there's, you know, this will arouse suspicion. Like, where'd you get this? And, you know, we were all thinking like the notebook is gonna be the thing to incriminate Poppy, but maybe it's this, you know, this pin. And, you know, like now she'll be in danger. Where's this from? And how did you get this? And Poppy will be pursued. And people in the back were like, oh, is that person in back Claude? But I don't think so. But Danny was like, you know, the Poppy's mom theory, Darla made this amazing, amazing post with like all the females that ever appear in Mid-Apocalypse. She's like, oh, maybe, you know, all the Poppy mom suspects. So Donnie's like, well, this person in back has kind of feminine features. Maybe that's Poppy's mom. Brown hair, you know, close to the pin. Why not?
Okay. So I'm gonna go on. So there's more dialogue here. It says, am I being naive and idealistic? I don't know, but I guess I'll find out. And then it looks like we're going to like a tropical jungle look and feel. I don't know. And then it says, I am Poppy Lynn Wilkes. I am 21 years old. And then we see feet running through the jungle. And when I seen the feet, before I scrolled, I knew it was Goliath.
Ah, nice.
I knew. I just had a feeling that she was giving us this last chapter for this season. And I knew he had to be thrown in there somewhere. We had to get some kind of, you know, answer. I mean, not much answer, but it's something. And then it says, I'm a Pisces and my favorite color is pink. And then it scrolls up and sure enough, there's his tattoo. And I'm kind of curious about his tattoo too. So like, I don't know if you looked into his tattoo or anything of what it means, but I know there looks like to be some sort of writing down below and I can't make out what it says.
The Ace of Spades, like I thought it just fit in with his personality because he's described as somebody who's very tough and like he clawed his way to the top and he looks like kind of like a braggart, you know, he's short so he has Goliath so he feels he has to compensate, but I think he's like the kind of guy who always wants to be the best at everything and like be in control and in command. And obviously the fact that he compiled that whole notebook thing, you know, he's sly, he's clever, he's always one step ahead. So I think that's just more like the Ace of Spades was just more like, oh, I'm awesome, I'm superior, I'm like the winning card and I'm the alpha like on top. I think that was just very reflective of his braggadocious and domineering personality.
The Ace of Spades is known to be the highest card in the deck. So, but the Ace of Spades also is the death card. So I don't know. But, and then we see some people chasing him, you know, who's chasing him? Why are they chasing him? Well, he's got some information, but
they both have guns.
We don't. Yeah, they do have guns. I didn't notice that before.
Yeah, all three
blending in with the background, but it makes you wonder. You know, where did they go to? Because this obviously is a complete different field where Poppy and them are. You know, it's a different setting. We're looking at like a. Oh goodness. Looks like a tropical jungle. So I don't know if he went clear down somewhere tropical or something, but he's running for his life. And then it continues with, and this is the start of my brand new life in the big city. So it's coming around from the beginning.
Right, Poppy. But this panel, by the way, when I saw this panel, I was like, he has got to be related to Torah. The yes. same golden eyes, the same yeah. skin tone. That picture, when I first saw him, when you see him up there, it really reminded me of Torah when he was on the beach, when he transforms from a kid to an adult. Like, it was the same features and the yeah. same body shape. And yeah, he is for sure related to Torah.
I think that they're siblings. I'm convinced that they are.
Oh, I am convinced they are too. They gotta be.
Or cousins, siblings or cousins, like mm-hmm. that, like that's the part, like they have to be related in some way, just because the situation, I don't know, like, did you guys, random thought, like the school that they have where all the Thuglets went to and all of that, is that where they put all the orphan kids? Was that talked about in your previous episode, Mindy? Like, I'm just wondering, like, how, this might be a later date discussion. I'll pull it back. Pull this theory back. I have a theory, but I'll sit on it until we get to the next one.
Yeah,
but
I guess there's one anyway. Last panel that we'll do. Yeah. That
one more. Let's go.
And poor Goliath, he just threw himself off a cliff. I mean, he just running for his life, and he had nowhere else to go, so he just jumped for it. And then you see the papers flying around in a bag, and makes you wonder what's in that bag. Something has to be in there of importance. Yeah, and but just kids, the scenery, it's, I don't know.
It's like dusk almost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally ending on a cliffhanger.
It is.
One is ending on a cliffhanger.
Oh no.
I died too when I saw that. I was like...
So, and the papers, obviously, like, the first thing I thought of when I saw those papers was, is it more of his evidence that he's compiled? And so, oh my God, there's so many crazy theories, because people were like, okay, is this a flashback or is this a present moment? So obviously he's wearing different shoes. So what happened back at the train station? Was that bloody shoe a total setup? Like, did he just plant a bloody shoe there to make people think he was dead? Did he plant the notebook there to make people, like, to throw people off? Is the notebook, like, totally a fake? Is it a red herring? I think Olga K was saying that maybe the real thing is in the papers that he has in his backpack. Did he my question is, because I always think that maybe Goliath, like, the fact that he sold Torah out to the police, right, he wanted out, and I mm-hmm. think that's a good thing, right? He wanted a clean slate, he wanted out of the clan that he helped start. And I'm thinking of the fact that he implicated Torah was maybe his way of looking out for Torah and his way of helping Torah get out. And the fact that he compiled all this evidence, that's like a proof, you know, a way to bring the mafia down and again, get everyone that he cares about out. I don't think Goliath is the bad guy. I suspect he's a good guy. And mm-hmm. maybe this, you know, he got Torah to come there, right? And this person I actually didn't write down, it was someone on Facebook, I don't remember who, she said, you know, Torah seemed remarkably unconcerned when he got there and he saw the bloody shoe. He didn't then proceed to scour the bushes and look for Goliath. He just followed Poppy. And I was like, mm-hmm. I thought he would be a little more careful and look around more for Goliath. So maybe he recognized, like, there was something about that shoe and the papers that made him realize, oh, this is not, Goliath's not really in trouble, or Goliath set this up as a sign for me, or like some kind of hint.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. It really was chocolate on the shoe. Plot twist. It wasn't blood. It was chocolate. It was the red herring the whole time. I like to think it's happening right now. I like to think that he's still on the run. Like, my theory is it's still happening. And he still has some of his paperwork and he's just gathering as much as he can, you know? When I look at jungle areas and I think mafia, I think like drug cartel, obviously. Drug cartel immediately, like stuff going on in the jungle, like going down there. I mean, but Goliath's whole, like how they describe him, is someone who moved up very quickly. Like, he's very, very smart. And he was trying to gain power very, very fast. And obviously the more power you gain, in some ways they thought would be safer, but obviously that's not really the answer, right? The more power you gain, the more people want to kill you. So, you know, like, it's a double-edged sword. And I think that Goliath, like, I think he's good too. I think they might play on that for a little bit. I also probably think he's really selfish too. Like, I think he's a good guy, but he's also very selfish. Like, that's what I'm going to think he's coming into this. But yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, why isn't Tor like more emotionally distraught about this whole situation? Like, why is he like, oh, Goliath, what have you done now? Like, he's not like, you know, no tears, no anything. And you could say that's his tough mafia facade, but yeah, I think the game is afoot. You know, it's still afoot, guys.
I think too, though, like because he seemed like he was pretty pissed off at Goliath. Like, even, you know, when he checked his phone and he was like, oh, what does this asshole want, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, like, and we kind of saw, you know, what maybe Tora might be pissed off at Goliath for, like, in the long run. But, yeah, I just, I feel like maybe he's not that concerned only because it's not really anything of his concern. It isn't really something he's thinking about until, you know, somebody kind of mentions about it, or it's like something that's in the back of his head.
I know that when Poppy first walked in on Jewelry cheating on her, for like the first, I don't know, 40 episodes until like they got to Regina's Peak, I was wondering why Poppy wasn't reacting to it. And then when we got to Regina's Peak, it was explained like, oh, she was pushing it down, she was avoiding it, she was busying herself with work. And I'm kind of wondering, maybe we'll get an explanation of what happened and why Tora's reaction was what it was. And, you know, I definitely think that, right, I agree with you, Rissa, he's selfish. Like, the fact, even if, you know, he wanted to clear his name, right, and he sold out Tora for that, he didn't tell Tora, oh, this is to help you get out of the clan and help you collaborate with the police and who knows what, right? He clearly didn't tell him that because Tora was pissed off and he was known as like a double crosser, right? So I do think that maybe ultimately it is for the best that he sold him out, and because we suspect maybe there's a collaboration between him and Lane. But I totally agree. I think Goliath is selfish first, and, you know, I don't know what his arc is going to be, but maybe that is something that he has to redeem himself by learning to be selfless. We'll see. But I'm so curious about Goliath. Oh my gosh.
I'm excited for the next chapters. I don't know what's going to happen with Poppy and Tor. Like, I don't know what the next step is or like what's going to happen after this. So I'm really excited to see, like, will it be a little time skip or will it be just like immediately after going into the publishing of the book and Quincy, you know, getting that over. As you said, actually, Quincy was my other person. I really want to know more about him. I think he's very duplicitous, not in a bad way, but he has an on and off switch and he uses it. And I think we just haven't seen the mafia version of Quincy yet.
Because I think Quincy will be like instrumental in helping them get out. And I think that actually might be, that's my wish. And again, Lily has her own direction. So I don't know what she'll do with him. But my vision for Quincy is that right now, you know, he's immature and he's afraid to step up to the plate because he just is fearful, right? And he just pretends to be this softy. And I'm hoping that his growth will be that he learns to grow up and be mature and take responsibility and put himself in a situation where he is afraid and where he does stick out his neck and risk something to help the people that he loves. So that's what I'm really hoping to see out of Quincy.
Me too. I, for this chapter, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm like, oh, more romance, but I want to figure out what the big mystery is. Cause that's what it starts off with, right? Like everything is like, even when we get into the story where Poppy, like it says like all these dots are connecting and we're starting to see everything slowly connect into each other. And that's why, you know, it's so much fun because we get to like speculate and say, oh, what's going to happen next. Right. But I feel like with the next, you know, part, season, that we're going to start seeing these connections come together a little bit more. I definitely don't think we're going to find out everything with season two. I feel like this is going to be a few seasons, you know, later down the line, but I'm excited. I'm excited to see these connections slowly, like, you know, and the guessing and the, you know, coming together into one story.
Oh yeah. I'm interested to see more of, you know, like, I want to know, oh God, how do I word this? Like, I want to see Tora and the detective, you know, how they really know each other. I mean, you know, she has obviously been arrested, but I want to know if he's working with her to do whatever. You know, I want to know more about that storyline, the mice and all the clubs and all that stuff, and who's all helping Tora do all this. Because we know Tora's doing it. He got the mice. But I don't... I think he wants out. I mean, he does want out. He don't think he can get out unless something happens. But I'm hoping that's what Quincy helps along the lines of getting everyone out. Because honestly, I don't think Quincy likes it either. He's not that type of person. He uses his name for power, but that's just because it strikes fear into people. But I don't think that's who he is and who he wants to be.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I've also thought about the fact that people respect Tora, and after you saw Vincent and Tora's interactions, mm-hmm. Vincent's scared of Tora, like on some level. Like, he is definitely intimidated by Tora, and he has to do things to keep him in line, because in all reality, Tora could probably take over the clan. Very mm-hmm. easy. Like, I think it was like hinted into these moments. It's just that Tora doesn't have that ambition or anything. Mm-hmm. And I do think tinfoil theory that he's going to be put into a position where he's going to have to go toe to toe with Vincent in some manner. But like, that may be like, either it's going to be put on him or something where it's going to be like, Tora, you have to kind of like take over the situation, because no one else is going to go toe to toe with Vincent. I think mm-hmm. Tora is the only one, besides maybe the dark horse Quincy. But I think it's a lot more complicated for Quincy to do that with his father, and he definitely mm-hmm. probably doesn't want that mantle. I just feel like Tor is going to get more into, like, unwillingly pulled into it, where it's kind of like, or Vincent gets more paranoid about Tora, like, why is he not coming back to the clan, and why is he hanging out with this girl, and now I'm like, really, like, what's going on, and he yeah. hasn't looked too deep into it. I'm scared for when Vincent actually takes an interest in Poppy, because at this point, it's like here, and then it's probably going to be like, you know, escalated.
That's what I'm nervous for too, because obviously Tora's never been interested in anyone before, and then suddenly he is, and it's going to make Vincent suspicious of who she is and why this girl, why her, why is she the first one that he's shown interest in, you know?
And especially,
you know, I don't know if he'll try to use Poppy to hurt him. So
I'm excited to see the interaction between Vincent and Quincy, because we haven't really seen that other than, you know, that brief moment when Tora was a child and like they, you know, went to the beach or whatever, right? So we don't really know what Quincy is like with his father. Is there like a code switching there, right? Does he act different in front of his father? Like, because we've seen like a little bit of like Quincy when he does get a little bit more serious, right? So is that, you know, what he does when it comes to his dad specifically, or, you know, is he a disappointment to his dad? I don't know. Like, it's
when Vincent was talking to Tora, remember when he was in with the his office, he's like, yeah, you know, if people say you were my son, I kind of wished you were my son, you know, because Quincy's like pathetic, basically, is what he was saying.
Yeah.
Just sad.
I think he wants, you know, every mob boss wants a successor, but I don't think Vincent sees Quincy as his successor. You know, I think that's what he's grooming Tora to be, but Tora don't want to be. You know, so I think he is disappointed in how Quincy is. I don't think he turned out how he wanted to be, so hence Tora.
I think he might
be, you know, if Vincent did that, he saw that at a very early age, you know, Quincy was like 3-4, right? Yeah. So that was pretty foresightful of Vincent to give him a credit. Exactly. I guess he saw very young what his son was like, if that's what his plan was.
Yeah.
Which sounds like it was.
But I also thought of a double. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but Annie J was saying also, right, we were talking earlier about like how will Vincent react to Poppy, and if Poppy is a descendant or somehow related to the mafia, whether it's the Bottomans or her dad, a different side, or Quincy related to Quincy's mom, like who knows, if she is like from a mafia family, then it could kind of go along with the theory of Torah taking over, you know, Torah being representing the king, right, the descendant of Ulan, and her being a mafia, so maybe it would be an appropriate takeover. Who knows,
right? Yeah, that's what I'm gonna see. I actually had a little different of take. I thought like for a while Vincent was living his double life and he kept Quincy out of it. Like everything he did to Tor was behind the scenes. He didn't really show Quincy that side. But it could have been because he could see that Quincy wasn't the kind of strong that was gonna make a good mafia boss. So he just kept that always separate. I do think bloodline is probably important to him. I think that Quincy is well protected because Vincent's a snob, and usually elitist snobs care about bloodline and like their blood. I don't think he wants Torah to become the next in line. I think he is paranoid that Torah has the capability, and right now he's trying to demean Torah in every way possible, like keep him down, because he just wants to see him as an underling. That's how I saw it, where he's just like, you're my underling, you're gonna do what I say, you know.
Whoa. Because I mean, like earlier on, didn't he say like, you know, what happens to a dog when it acts up? Yeah. You kill it. And that's what he sees Torah as, like a tool, like to be used for the mafia.
Yeah.
Right, but maybe he was thinking that Torah would kind of be like the brains and the brawn of the operation and Quincy would be the face.
Yeah.
Or think he's gonna live forever. Vincent's like, I'm never gonna die. Like, no one's gonna outlive me because I'm like hateful, and hateful people live a long time. Like, he's just like, I don't know. But the sun is setting on this side, guys. But this chapter, I have to say, people were looking for this chapter for a lot of reasons. I don't think it could have been done better, in my opinion. It surprised me. It felt genuine. It felt mature. Like, this was kind of one of those endings where I'm like, I didn't feel like at any point this was campy. Like, campy. Like someone just threw this in, like a copy paste. And that's why I love it. I love that it was unique on every, like on so many levels.
Yeah, I want to point out like two final symbolisms about how the first and the last chapter relate. So, well, Miss Two is pointing out how in this chapter, both Torah and Goliath are falling, right? Torah's falling because of Poppy and something sweet, and Goliath's falling because of people running after him. But Patty was saying how in the beginning, the first episode, Poppy like yeeted herself off into the wilderness, like when she slammed into the bushes. And here Goliath is also doing the same thing, running off into the wilderness. So total parallelism, first and last episodes.
Yep.
Oh, maybe that could be like symbolism of being thrown into like whatever's next of like of life. Because that's essentially how it all starts for Poppy, is she's thrown into this situation. And we see this at the end where, you know, Goliath is thrown into whatever situation we might be seeing, you know, two months down the road when the next chapter comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be good. Woo.
The dots connecting. It's coming full circle. It's starting to go in. I like the thrown into people's lives, because now I see like new characters just like jumping into the scene, like, oh, I'm here, like let's go.
Well, that's I mean Poppy even in this chapter throws herself like, you know, on top of like the piggyback thing right at first, which and I mean we kind of see a little bit of this, you know, of like falling and so Lily really good at like, you know, putting all of these symbolist things that, you know, we analyze to death, but that's half the fun.
It is.
She's like
Love yes, it.
Exactly. She's like, yes, yes, talk. Because I love how she reads those questions. But I just thought of the falling thing. Guess what? Ben was thrown into Poppy's life. Cordelia, like, they got into almost a collision thing or whatever, and she kind of was thrown in there too. This theme is real. Like, actually, when I look back at different characters, I'm like, oh yeah, Ben was thrown in, and Cordelia was kind of thrown in, and I'm like, whoa. Anyways.
Oh. There's got to be more people we can put in. Mr. Morrison, he was thrown around by Tora.
Yeah. Like, this is how it goes.
Claude, he got picked up. No, okay. That's just too much. Okay, do we have any final thoughts before we say goodbye and for the next 2 months?
I know.
Facebook. All I know is that I'm going to go over and just start from the beginning and reread everything, because I've noticed that she doesn't put anything in the episode that's not supposed to mean anything. So if you go back and you find something new, it's got to mean something. So I like looking for just little teeny things that I might have missed along the way. So that's what I'm going to be doing.
This is the time for fan fiction and fan art. Yes. And like really promoting our fandom within, because we have so much talent on different levels. Someone just posted a timeline of the whole story and had the chapters broken down by like days. And I was just like, this is amazing, the intelligence behind this. So anyone watching, just go to Facebook and like join the fan. There's so many groups now. I only know three, but I think in the meantime, I think people also started, I don't know if you guys, you probably all saw it, but like a thanks to Lily, like online thanks to Lily.
And you can write thanks for reminding me, I'll link it here.
Yeah, you can write a message for free, or you can go on Ko-fi or that little thing where you buy a coffee. It's like you know, giving her a little tip, essentially. But these are things we can do in the meantime. I feel like she'd probably worry to go away for a little while. I mean, she'll still be a part of the community, but I think that's nice to support each other and Lily while she's away, because it's not easy for an artist to keep the steam going. So showing that appreciation, I think, is great. So that's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, that was actually a correlation. It really started with the FastPass group, so I want to thank both Michaela and Les, Lindsay. Oh God, I was like Leslie, no Lindsay. But I want to thank them because they really did. And somebody else like brought that idea to them, and they kind of put that all together. So I absolutely want to thank them because they have. They do a lot for this community and like little things. And here's the other thing, like behind the scenes, we all talk like behind the scenes when it comes to like the different groups. And then I kind of correlate it to my mods. And like every so often I talk to Lily as well, but, I kind of wanted to read this last part from Lily, and she says, "Dearest readers, thank you for all of your love and support, and I hope to see you guys again next season. Lots of love, Lily Dusk." And Lily is just so, like, she's the reason that we get to, you know, do this podcast and have this amazing community where we have all come together. And, and I just want to thank her because I know she listens, because like all of the work that you've done, you've helped so many friendships grow because of your amazing story. So yeah
absolutely, like she's created something that's she's helping people through pull through a hard time too, and she's bringing a lovely story from inside out here. Can't thank her enough. I mean, watching her since almost the beginning, and it's just like she keeps getting better and better, but she really connects to people, and I feel like that love is sincere. So I mean, really, that's all I gotta say, and I know we'll be around. We're gonna be back for season two for sure.
It's actually funny because I didn't realize this till just now, but it's actually the year anniversary from when I first started the Facebook group, which was like a whim. Like I was like, oh, I'm just gonna do this, right? And it's grown to, I think we're going on 5,000, like it's over 4,000 at this point. But I mean, I did not think that that group was going to grow. And I found a lot of the growth happened during the COVID when that was first happening in March, because it was a really tough time for a lot of people, right? And that's like, we started a lot more people like came into the group and talked about the story because they had like a little bit more time, and it helped them get through. And it just like how much we've grown in like the last year, just still, it blows my mind. Like, I'm so grateful.
I love that group. I love all the Facebook groups because there's so much amazing stuff on them. Yeah, I remember when I first, I mentioned this in the earlier podcast, I was very much a snob before I read Midnight Poppyland, and I would only read some like classics, essentially. And I came across Midnight Poppyland through a Facebook ad. I clicked it, fell in love, and I joined your Facebook group pretty fast after I fell in love. And I remember I wrote like, okay, guys, like I just started reading this and I'm obsessed, and I'm like kind of, like, I feel like I should be embarrassed because it's like a cartoon and I'm 31. I was 30, so 31. And I was, and every single person was like, welcome, one of us. Now you know what it's like. I was like, so I'm not crazy. You were all like me.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I remember around the time that you first joined, because you were posting quite a bit, right? And you were like, oh my God, like I found this thing and it's like, you know, brought me so much joy. And I just like, it's just so amazing. And I was just like, oh man, like she's one of us. Like she's really been brought into the fold. And I've seen, you know, a lot of different people like kind of grow within this fandom. And it's the same with you, Risa, like, sorry, did I pronounce your name right?
Oh, Risa, but people call me Nathan too, so it's fine.
Okay, I didn't want to mispronounce it because I know what that's like. So, but like I've seen you grow as well, like within the community and everybody, and I just
awesome. I don't know, videos now,
It brings me so much joy because like, I've been around for a little bit, you know, before it went on, and like finally being able to talk to other people and, you know, see the community grow. It just, yeah, it's great.
And little me, I have bad social anxiety. And so it's like, I don't post a lot, and then it's hard for me to interact with people, but this has been one of the best stories and that I've read from webtoons. And I love Lily because she actually, I've noticed that she takes our opinions to heart, and we've seen that with the hair braiding scene and everything. You know, she listens, and yeah, she's got her whole story planned out, as she said, but she takes what we say into consideration because she wants to make us happy and to continue to read her story, and we love it. So, but yeah,
Thank you so much, Rahania, for coming on to the podcast for the first time, and be happy to have you again. Although now I have to reschedule all the, because we had it scheduled out for like till episode 60, I have to reschedule everybody.
New year podcast.
Anywho, thank you so much for coming on. It is always a deep pleasure to talk with everybody, and I can't wait till season two.
It's gonna be exciting.
I can't wait to see what she has in store for us. So
okay guys, have a good night. I'll see you in 2 months.
Oh yeah,
bye.
Bye.
Bye.